and welcome to Who Are You? It's the Babylon 5 Watchcast by a couple of former strangers, now friends, who are continuing to get to know each other today for the last time, discussing one of their favorite shows, Babylon 5. I'm Laura.
And I'm Jafar.
And it's the day.
It's the day. This is heavy. I commented in the Discord that I cried 3 times while watching this episode.
Yeah. That's an impactful one.
It's a lot. This episode's a lot. In fact, this episode is so much that I don't think there's anything that we can say. So just
very true.
Go watch the episode. Like, what are you doing here listening to a podcast? Go go watch the episode. I don't got words. There's no meaningful discourse to add to this episode that this episode does not bring upon itself.
This is very true.
Just go fucking watch it.
I think that everyone should just turn us off right now and go watch.
Yep. Just go watch the episode.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks to Jeremy Siegel for our lovely theme music. You can find more of Jeremy's work at jeremysiegel42.bandcamp.com or streaming services Nuclear Jaguar.
And thank you to Angry Duck Time Machine on Instagram for our podcast artwork.
Thanks, Aaron, for the easiest editing job we've ever made you do.
And thank you to the listener for being here. Please join us over in our Discord or send us an email at whoareyoub5@gmail.com.
Yeah. And we'll be back next week with our season 5 recap.
Okay. Bye.
Bye.
Oh, wait.
You're still here? They're still running? The mics are still running?
Yeah.
Studio's still live?
Yeah, apparently.
I guess now that everyone's watched it, we could talk about the episode.
Yeah. I think that's a great idea.
Okay.
We know you've watched it because we just told you to, so.
Yeah, and you're not, like, driving or something. I hope you didn't, like, pull over to try and watch the episode on YouTube or some other travesty.
Never can tell these days.
Yeah. Fun fact, this episode drops on May 8th, right?
Mm-hmm.
In 2024. Shooting wrapped on this episode on May 5th, 1997.
Wow.
That's a fun little coincidence.
Look at us. We're only X number of years too late.
I know.
I don't
think we've ever had another episode that would align so closely, and it's fitting that it's this one.
Yeah, it really is.
Man, I hope, listener, if you're sticking with us, I really hope you're ready for not a lot of jokes and mostly me talking about crying, because that's what I've got for you today.
Maybe we'll figure out how to make jokes about Jafar crying. I don't know. I had the same problem, Jafar, as I was watching this episode. I don't know what it is in the universe or me being like middle-aged now, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
But I was doing a lot of like mortality thinking in general before this episode. And then during this episode, I was like, oh God. Oh no.
Mm-hmm.
Let's try not to be
20 years left looking at a calendar a whole bunch like,
Yeah. Okay, we'll do our best.
Yeah, we'll try. We'll try and do this.
And of course, this is season 5, episode 22, Sleeping in Light.
I think we've probably talked about it before. This was actually filmed as the last episode of season 4.
Uh-huh.
Which is why Marcus and Avadova are in the credits.
Yeah. We don't actually see Marcus at all, though.
No.
Yeah.
No, we notably don't see Marcus. And at the end of the episode, when they do the theme,
uh-huh,
we get the first and last shots of characters chronologically.
Uh-huh.
And we see Marcus in a cryo tube. We don't even get a picture of him. It's just the plate.
Oh, I didn't catch that.
Yeah. We've got a little bit of episode. I'm sure we're going to get there quick because like most episodes like this, you just kind of do the recap and try to do it justice because you really can't.
Yeah, I could not take a lot of notes about this episode either, because mostly, and I rightfully so, this episode is a lot of like beautiful speeches. And how do you recap beautiful speech. Like,
just fucking listen to it.
Yeah.
Just go watch the episode. Like, in fact, if you made it this far and you haven't stopped and watched the episode,
please go watch the episode.
We're not going to do it again, but know that I'm thinking about doing it again. Mm-hmm. Close this episode as many times as we damn well please. We should probably start it. We open on Garibaldi doing our last diary entry. It's to open an episode, at least. There's another one at the end. It's 2281, 20 years since the end of the Shadow War, 20 years since Lurien breathed on the embers of Sheridan's life to give him more time.
Right. So it is time, and Sheridan is well aware it is time. He keeps waking up in the night. Apparently, he's been having a dream about Lurien for several days, weeks. Delenn makes a comment on it.
Sheridan gets up to watch the sunrise, and Delenn joins him. He knows that he's got just time enough, so Delenn sends the messages to gather those who remain. And this is when we start cutting around.
Yeah. Sheridan is wearing the ranger robe now, and later in the episode, we find out that he stepped down as president.
A couple of years ago, yep.
Yeah. After 18 years as president, then?
Yeah. Yeah, he'd been president for 18 years.
Yeah, and he and Delenn just swapped places, basically.
Maybe 17. But yeah.
Yeah. So, interesting choice there. I'm going to put a pin in that one.
Every great democracy in the world is known for a president ruling for 17 years, stepping down, and his wife immediately taking over. That's
right.
The hallmark of an excellent democracy.
Yes, yes. Ruler for life, a famous, nice tenet of good governments everywhere.
No problems. So when we're cutting around, we go to Ivanova first. She's now an Earth Force general, and she doesn't care much for her mostly ceremonial role and drops everything to immediately head to Minbar.
Yeah, we get a ranger like barging in and very ineffective Earth Force dude.
Yeah.
Just trying to make excuses about it. Even though she like said, if a ranger ever shows up, please let them in first thing. He still didn't want to. I don't know. This is very, this seems very on brand for military.
Yeah. We go over to Centauri Prime, where Veer is in bed with two ladies.
Yeah.
Veer's got game. Facing the wrong direction, I think. I don't know how Centauri sex exactly works here. I thought it was primarily done standing up, to be perfectly honest. Just where everything's at, that would make the most sense to me. But, you know, maybe he's just having a tickle party or something.
I mean, this is the lead up to, right? So who knows what you get up to when you do that?
Yeah, I haven't tried to log on to Centauri FetLife. I don't know what Veer's into.
Yeah, but he's got a lot of game. But he is also in bed in, like, his full emperor regalia, right? Like,
right.
It's the full white suit, the vest, the sash, the pins, the bows. Like,
yeah, the whole deal.
I love it. You know, I know that I said when I said that I had not listened or I had not watched most of season 5 that I was sure I had seen Sleeping in Light. And I'm still sure I've seen it, but I had it jumbled up in my mind.
Yeah.
And I guess I thought that Londo was still the emperor at this point, and we were going to see some of that stuff that we had cut to in earlier episodes when Sheridan's jumping around in time. I thought we were going to see some of that again. And
no,
I was a little confused when I realized Veer was the emperor. So,
yeah, I think you were confusing this one, our previous episode, and maybe some stuff from The Gathering, or in the beginning. It would have been in the beginning.
Right.
The prequel movie. So,
and when I thought more about it after the episode was over, I remembered that I think in that cutting around Lost in Time thing, there's a mention that David, their son, is like 16, maybe? Or he's about to hit that magic date when the urn is going to be given to him. So, yeah, that makes sense that, yes, Veer is the emperor, but that is not how I was, like, remembering the pieces of this episode. So I had to put that back together in my mind.
We go over to Mars, where Franklin is playing tennis with Mary Garibaldi, daughter of Michael and Lise.
Yeah, he asks what we're all thinking. Where's Lise?
She's out shopping. Her reason for not being in this entire episode.
We love Lise. We love Lise on this podcast. So yeah, well thought out.
Best character. Yep. Franklin is Mars side for a visit, but he's still doing the head of xenobiology gig on Earth. And then they don't even like wait for Lise to get home. Like they book their flights and hightail it to Minbar. They don't like, oh, do you think she'll want to come? It's like, no, she's going to have to run the business in my stead or take care of our daughter or do other things for me being an absentee fuck.
Right. Right. Well, you know, when you get that rangergram, you got to answer. You got to go.
You could call her cell phones, you know, like it's crazy. I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah.
Just book a flight for two and then we'll tell Lise after. We cut over to Minbar.
Oh, hey, sorry. Before we cut over, did your recording of choice have a really weird interstitial here?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it had just like the B5. Yeah, I caught that.
Yeah. And it was just like so tonally out of place, considering the material around it. It made me laugh. I had a good time.
Normally when we get those, we get two because there's one on either side. And I have to wonder if this was just like the commercial break because there hadn't been credits and they just needed to let everyone know what show they were watching.
Yeah. That's a good point because we did not have theme or credits in this episode.
Yeah, this episode
the very,
just
very
starts
end. Right.
And runs. Yeah. Well, speaking of running, Franklin gives Sheridan a week at most, but it's hard to say since they've never truly understood how he's alive in the first place.
Right.
Delenn comes in and she wants to talk about it, but John doesn't want to talk about it. He just wants everyone to be happy. Which, I mean, shitty for Delenn, but also, like, I don't know that I would behave differently with this kind of a clock on my life.
And, I mean, he's the one with the clock, right? So I think we should try to follow his lead and take respect for his wishes. Like, if this is how he wants to do it, he's the one who's got the hard thing ahead of him right now. So do what he wants to do.
His hard thing will be over in a couple of days. And Delenn's hard thing is going to be another 70 years because of it. So.
Right. And 70 years, she's going to have some time for a therapist in there, I think.
We hope.
Yeah. I just want to say in the scene that I really liked the costuming choices. I know that aging people up is a hard thing to do, especially on these shows where we now look back at it and go, oh my God, you can see all the old makeup and whatever. But the glasses that they gave Franklin look very good, very cute. Mm-hmm. The dress that they put Delenn in, really nice. Like they put some of that budget and money into making this last episode look really good.
Yes. All of the old makeup. I think because it's only 20 years, they didn't go hard on it. Normally when you see old makeup, it's dramatic. It's all like, oh, I was 40 and now I'm 120, you know, like.
Yeah.
And so they really have to like just grab the paper mache and just apply it to your face and let it dry how it's going to dry without any kind of backing. In this, it's like, no, we're just going to do some wrinkles, you know, like we're just going to bring out some crow's feet and stuff and just
color some hair a little bit.
Yeah. And just let it look natural. And I'm so grateful for that because if the aging makeup in this was jarring, I don't know that this episode would work. And that's terrible to think about.
And JMS established that we live longer. Humans live longer in this time because we have Bester, who we know is like in his 80s, but looks like he's in his 60s. So we don't have to age up as hard. I think you have to do some because even that, like, canon in the world doesn't does it work for the television audience that's watching it at this time? Like, yeah. If you don't do any aging. But yeah, they kept it nice and subtle. They made great costuming choices. I was really happy. It's really pretty.
100%. It looks so good.
Speaking of really pretty, Veer just looks great in the Emperor's outfit, yeah. Doesn't he?
He does. He's just belonged perfect. In it the whole time. Yeah. It really suits him
He's
well.
A real emperor.
So we go over to dinner here. Garibaldi tells a story of a Pachmara eating a dead cat. And Veer talks about the time him and Londo heard them singing.
Yeah.
They toast to absent friends. You know, Lita, Byron, presumably Corwin. Oh, wait, no. None of those people. Lise, no. None of them. Nope. Jakar, Londo, Lanier, and Marcus make the cut.
Yeah.
And that's it. Not Sinclair.
Well, we know he went away and he got to like found a whole religion and whatever, so I think he's fine.
Yeah, I mean, they still haven't seen him in 20 years. Like, if Ivanova is going to drop Marcus, Garibaldi needs to be the one to say something about, you know, Sinclair, I feel, given their history.
Yeah, that's
that would
a
make
solid
sense
point.
To me. I mean, I know that Garibaldi gives us Jakar after, you know, Veer says Londo, which is fair. I don't expect anyone to bring up Natoth here, because if Jakar was at the table, he'd bring up Natoth. To be perfectly honest, none of them ever respected or cared for Lita in the first place, so that makes sense to me that she wouldn't get brought up.
Yeah.
Same with Lockley. That would be a little weird for any of them to bring up, probably. Maybe Garibaldi.
Sheridan's ex-wife.
But
no,
also,
Sheridan,
you know,
needs to bring up Lockley.
Just one last jab at Delenn. I know I'm dying tomorrow, but I just wanted to remind you I'm still thinking about my ex-wife.
Yes, perfect.
Oh, God, what a shitty thing that would have been. I mean, obviously she wasn't a character yet, so there's reasons why she doesn't get brought up. But it is kind of weird that I think you don't have someone say Sinclair. I mean, there's five of them at the table and they say four names. Like, come on. You can assign someone else. Or Kosh, for that matter. You know? Yeah. Like, there are reasons to say people's names. Okay.
Yeah. Well,
enough ranting on that. This party goes on into the night with everyone reminiscing and telling stories. Ivanova's having a tough time, though. This is very difficult for her. And so is Delenn, obviously.
She's lost a lot of people, it sounds like.
Yeah. Ivanova is mostly upset about the lack of meaning she feels in her life right now. She talks about how everyone's reminiscing about these times when they were doing something with purpose. She feels she has no purpose anymore. And Delenn's all like, well, funny story. Ranger 1's about to die, so we need a new Ranger 1. If you want to, you know, move in to the estate, you know, wear the robes, hint, hint, wink, wink, nudge, nudge. They were roommates. Sorry, what?
I just realized that our Ranger 1s have been Delenn, Sheridan, and now Ivanova, who are people who have never done Ranger training.
Yeah. I don't think we've had anyone be Ranger 1 that we're aware of. Presumably, whoever Sinclair took over for went through Ranger training.
Right.
Maybe that's on purpose, though. Maybe it's like a president being the head of the military thing.
I guess. I don't know. I don't know that I like it.
Yeah. I mean,
interesting.
I would definitely prefer that someone have a good understanding of the people that they're leading, including understanding what their training is like. Firsthand.
Right.
I think, like, that's important.
Someone who has been through it. Right.
They don't have to be good at it. I'm not expecting them to be the best ranger. You wouldn't want the best ranger to be Ranger 1. You want the best ranger out there doing ranger shit the best they can. But you still want someone who understands the job on a very baseline level. In bed, Sheridan talks to Delenn about going out for a Sunday drive like he and his dad used to do when he was young. Did you ever do this? Have you ever done just a drive, like pick a direction and just go?
I don't know that that's a thing I've ever done, but I can feel why it would be really fun to do. And I kind of do want to do it, but I feel constrained by my life. You know what I mean?
Yeah, fair. This is like a game we used to play in college. I had a group of like three or four friends and whoever was available for an overnight. We'd like do it on a Friday or Saturday night. We'd be like, okay, nothing's going on until like, we don't need to be home until Sunday evening. We would just randomly choose a direction, drive out that way until we found something interesting, and then do the interesting thing, and then find the nearest hotel motel next to a bar and get a room and just meet a bunch of the locals in whatever random town we ended up in the middle of nowhere, Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
Those were fun days.
Yeah.
I highly recommend.
It sounds really nice. It sounds
driving.
It sounds nice in both the way you describe it and the sentimental way that Sheridan describes it. I imagine around here that whatever direction you took, at some point you would hit a Brahms and you would stop for ice cream and it would be really nice.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sheridan needs to do a Sunday drive. He's decided. He needs to just go out on his own, alone, into the night.
It's not just about him taking the Sunday drive, though. It's about him not coming back, and he understands that. You know, he thinks that this will help Delenn keep everyone in the Alliance in line by having the air of mystery about his death, his disappearance instead of his death.
Mm-hmm.
And the symbolism attached to that for the Minbari will be important. And she's just all like, yeah, fuck you, though. Like, at what point do I, your wife, get a say in how this goes? Yep.
I don't know. I mean, he's right about the power of a story being really, really strong.
Mm-hmm.
Sucks for her that she kind of gets shit on in that.
Yeah. Yeah, it does.
That feels familiar, though, in that in the power of a story, a woman often gets shit upon.
Yeah. Ain't that the truth?
Oh, well.
Sheridan puts on his old Army Alight uniform, says that it must have shrank over time. That fun little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Delenn greets him before he leaves so that they can say their farewells. And at this point, I want to state that I was not crying. I had just been chopping onions.
I'm making a lasagna.
I was going to ask you where the first part was that you first started crying in this episode. And
yeah, it was here.
Yeah,
I think, actually. Yeah, this is... I feel like there's two places everyone cries in this episode, and then I have like a bonus third that I don't know everyone cries, but I definitely did, and I feel like I'm not alone in crying in that moment, but also it's also kind of a weird thing to get that emotional about. We'll talk about it when we get there.
Okay, let's keep going.
Yeah, so we go over to Babylon 5. Sheridan comes through Space TSA, and it is just empty.
Ghost town.
Yep.
Yeah.
Commander Nils is in charge of the station here, and he tells us that it's become redundant. There's no reason for this station to exist anymore. No one ever comes here. Everything's fine. I'm sure a chunk of that is everything's been moved to Minbar. I'm sure a chunk of that is the technology sharing. Now every race has anti-grav. Uh-huh. Every race has some more creature comforts in space travel. So they probably, it's a lot easier to make those trips from world to world. So having these kinds of layway stations is probably not as important when it comes to galactic travel. Because Babylon 5, besides being a station of diplomatic note, was also like a trading station. You know, that was a huge thing. Constantly ships coming in and out, constantly goods moving through. And that might not be required due to technological advances anymore. So...
yeah.
There's no one.
Just not as important. And certainly not important enough for Earth to maintain a budget.
No. No, we know how Earth loves cutting those budgets on things that may or may not be important. What's infrastructure, guys? station is on the precipice of decommission, And then Sheridan is walking around and he walks into an empty Zocalo and he recalls his speech from when he returned from Zahadum.
Mm-hmm.
And then Zack surprises him, which is fun because like two episodes ago, Zack was all like, I think I'll be here when they turn off the lights. And here he is waiting for them to turn off the lights. And I mean, obviously they had filmed this before they had written that line. So that's fun. Zack was invited to the dinner, but the Rangers couldn't find him because he had recently returned to Babylon 5. You figure Ivanova would have known this.
Nope.
Like, as a general, she's like got an invested interest in both Zack and the station. Like, you'd figure you would monitor like any personnel like that would show up on an RSS feed or something. You'd be like, oh, Zack got transferred to Babylon 5. Like, Zack reactivated his commission and transferred to Babylon 5. That's interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Especially with his
known history of abuse.
Maybe I should give him a fucking call and make sure he's okay. Because if I had a friend come out of retirement after 15 years or whatever and go back to the place where they have the fondest memories of their life and station themselves there, I would be concerned. If I had, like, one of my college friends all of a sudden drop everything and move back to college town, I would be like, oh, God, everything's in their life has fallen apart. This must be terrible. Like, I would be freaking out. So.
It is the time to reach out. Yeah. Unusual behavior.
Zack and Sheridan comment how the station was once full of life, but now it will simply stop.
Yeah.
In a way that really echoes with Sheridan and his situation.
Mm-hmm.
Zack being unawares.
Yeah, that is kind of sad, isn't it?
Yeah. And then Sheridan takes his little one-person white star out to Coriana 6, where he told the Elder Races that it's their time now.
Yes. So this is not Zahadum or the system that Zahadum was in. This is the end of the war system. Okay. I was thinking he was returning to the site of where he had died, but now you've reminded me that's not the same thing.
Yeah. This is where all the Elder Races pieced off.
Right. So he's going to peace out too in the same place. Gotcha.
Delenn grabs John's pillow and starts cuddling it. She knows.
No.
Right at this moment.
Mm-hmm.
And his eyes close and a light appears. And it's Lorien who is there to take him beyond the rim.
Yeah. So does this mean the first ones all died? Or they all just like left this plane of existence? Wow.
I think it's up to interpretation on purpose.
Yeah. Of course. Right.
You know, it's the John references Lord of the Rings in here when he talks about the Minbari going off to sea.
Uh-huh.
Which is what the elves do in Lord of the Rings.
Yep.
When it's their time, they just went off to sea, you know.
Yeah.
So that's what's going on here too. And then Ivanova comes in and fills us in. He vanished without a trace. They found his ship just floating. Everything was sealed. No one was inside. A real Agatha Christie here.
Spooky, yeah.
Yeah. And then the station decommissioning ceremony occurs with all the remaining characters gathered to see the station off.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, none of the characters except for Veer and Zack, who took over the station, like Talon and stuff, everyone who was in the last shot is like the people taking over the station. None of them.
Yeah.
Lockley doesn't come to visit for this.
Yeah.
Like, obviously, I know that there's, like, some production shit that prevent that from being the case, but it is amusing to me.
It's amusing to me because whenever you, like, take over a project or a job from somebody who had it a long time, it's maybe not always, like, the best, most fun job that you ever do in your life. And all of them, I want to picture as being, like, fuck this place when they get the invitation to the decommissioning. Like, fuck no.
Yeah.
Fuck all the way off. That's my headcanon of what happened there. My favorite moments in this scene is Veer giving his little wave. I'm doing the fingers. And it looks like Garibaldi grabs like a souvenir shot glass from the bar. And I was like, oh, yeah. Nice little nod. I like it.
Yeah. A mechanic played by Joe Straczynski turns off the lights of the station as it is then immediately decommissioned in fire. I hope he had time to get off.
Yeah, really, right? I hope he's on that last shuttle out. I don't know. If you were Joe Straczynski, would you want to just go up in flames with it when it was all over? Like,
I mean, he had a lot to say about what he was going to do with his career after this point.
Yeah.
Some of which panned out.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. He very famously went on a I never want to do another TV show again rant for a while there.
Oh, no.
Like, I did the TV show. Why would I do another TV show? I did the thing. I don't want to do stuff again, which is kind of a thorough line when you look at him and his opinions on things. But he did also say, I would take the lowest rung job in a writing room if it meant that everything I wrote was never messed with, because that's what he cared about more than anything else, was being able to just make his art.
Yeah.
But he was mostly talking about how he just wanted to, like, move on to being a novelist at this point. Which he did do a little of, but not nearly what he had, I think, anticipated.
Yeah.
Anyways, the station is decommissioned in a blaze of fire, as predicted all those years ago. Once again, I'm not crying.
It's just been raining on my face.
Is this your maybe everyone doesn't cry at this spot, or is it?
I mean, the last one is the end of the episode with Delenn on the bench. Everyone cries there. If you don't cry there, I'm worried about you.
I feel like I just had tears in my eyes from our first moment, just through the whole thing at that point.
I will say, like, if I had to, like, rank my cry on how, like, how much I was physically impacted by it, the first one was kind of low. This one was high. This one was, like, pause, wiping tears, like, near active sobbing. And then at the end, it's just like, God damn it. Just trying not to finish the episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Ivanova monologues what everyone else is kind of do. Or, well, she doesn't monologue what they're doing, but we see what everyone else is doing with their lives after this.
Yeah, we get a little bit about everything. The station changed the future for everybody, and it changed those who were there. We see Mary won her tennis tournament.
Congrats, Mary. Where's Lise?
Where's Lise? Franklin is back on Earth. Veer offered Zach a job on Centauri Prime.
Yeah, interesting choice, but I love it. I want to see more Zach on Centauri Prime. Where's that spinoff? Give me that spinoff.
Is that in our Centauri trilogy?
I hope so. God, I hope so. I don't remember it specifically. I only remember the vaguest outline of those books. So if Zach's not in it, I'm going to be pretty mad.
Yeah. Ivanova dons the robes of Ranger One.
Looks great.
And we see Delenn watching the sunset, thinking of John, reaching out to the sun like she did when he left.
No. Again, not crying. Not at all.
Crying.
And if I am crying, it's not because of you. It's because I'm thinking about a friend of mine. You don't know who is dying. That's right, dying.
Yeah. We get a bunch of crew photos. There's just like a ton of crew photos that rapid fire play here. And then we get a shot of all of the crew at the end with the white stars flying over them. And then we get the opening credits, but instead of it being the normal, we get the first timeline appearance and the last timeline appearance of all of the characters in the show. We see not Jakar from anything previous, but we see him the farthest in the timeline we saw him, which was in World Without End. Same with Londo.
Yeah.
As Christopher Franco really earns that paycheck on this version of the ending credits here. It is weird, though. Like, they're not super consistent with it. Like, we get the gathering Jakar, but not the gathering Delenn.
Oh, yeah. Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, I guess Jakar changed a lot less than Delenn did.
I was going to say, is it the big makeup changes? That seems like the only reason I could think that they'd be like, no, we really don't want to put these two next to each other because it is going to be really noticeable.
Yeah.
It's going to be jarring. I think that's why you would leave that out. Yeah.
For sure.
I did notice the music throughout this episode. Just really good. Really fitting. Really beautiful.
I know that like the music in this show overall is fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
And I know like if you go back and listen to our talk on Midnight on the Firing Line, like the first actual episode of the show, I'm talking like mad shit about how there's no music in this show. And really, it's really just they needed time to like build and record the music and stuff.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And then once there was like enough pieces there where they didn't have to use the main theme five times in an episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's all fantastic. I mean, even the main theme back in season one was a banger. Like, it's all so good.
Yeah. This is an extremely well put together finale. Like,
for sure.
Amazing.
One of the best. And with that, for the last normal episode of Babylon 5, Laura, I have to ask, how would you rate this episode on a scale of Babylon's 1 to 5?
I mean, if you give this anything less than a 5, I think you're a hater.
Right. 100% on board. It is the 5 out of 5.
Yeah.
Even if it is not the best episode of the show. Mm-hmm. And my main, and there's an argument to be made there regardless of your personal feelings on it. It's not my favorite episode of the show.
Sure.
But it is one of the best, if not the bar. Like, you have to be this good to be a Babylon 5 out of 5.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so. It's affecting. If you don't cry, I'm a little worried about you. Like, maybe you should seek out some help for that.
Yeah.
If I had to put a couple of criticisms on it, which you don't, I really wish we could have seen David and where's Lise, obviously.
Yeah, I mean, it's appropriate that they take this last opportunity to remind us that they hate Lise and Alita. They don't get treated like real characters because they were never treated like real characters.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah, yeah. We get told about David. Oh, David is off at ranger training. But it's like, I kind of would have liked to have seen it. I don't know.
I also am going to call a little bullshit. Like, they didn't want David to have any special treatment in the Rangers, right?
Mm, okay.
Like, if any other ranger's dad was dying, would they get leave to go be with them in their last moments? Probably.
I think reasonably so, yes.
I don't think that's his dad's the president in Ranger One, so they're just going to order him back. It's like, no, like, make him take a shuttle or whatever. Like, don't have the White Star flip around.
Yeah.
Something that it might not do otherwise. But I don't think it's unreasonable to expect leave on the precipice of the death of a parent.
Yeah.
Now, there is another explanation for why we don't get David that Delenn offers, which is John didn't want him there because he wants him to remember him as like his dad being like strong and like healthy and have these happy memories of him as opposed to him dying.
Okay.
Which,
yeah,
I mean, I get that. Like,
yeah,
you know, like, to get real personal real quick, my dad was sick for a long time before he passed.
Yeah.
You know, like, I held his hand as he passed away. Like, I was there for that moment. Mm-hmm. And that is a traumatic experience that I think about and have to associate with any happy memory of him. Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying that I would change the past and how I handled and how I attended and all that stuff, because I appreciate the time I did have with him there. But also, if it was not my decision, would I be happier? Maybe.
Mm.
I might be. So I get it.
It's impossible.
Like, you know, yeah, there's no good answer.
Mm-hmm.
He either lives with the regret of never seeing him in his dying moments the rest of his life, or he carries the weight of being with him in his dying moments the rest of his life.
Yep.
There's no good answer. 100%. You're right.
Yeah. They're both a kind of burden. And Sheridan has eliminated the burden of choice from David. So
that's also shitty, though.
Yeah, I don't know.
Also, Sheridan's MO.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me make every decision for you, please. Only without the please. knowing him.
Yeah, I was going to say it is kind of a patriarchal decision, isn't it? To be like, well, mm-hmm. I'm the dad and I know best for my son and best is for me to make this choice. And I'm like, I don't know. I don't know about that.
Yeah, kind of a rude ass.
I also don't feel in a position to judge it either. So I will have to let that one lie.
Yeah.
But we all have feelings about it. And I think all of the feelings are valid. And that's a hard place to be.
For sure. But yeah, it would have been cool to at least have David, like, cast as a character.
Mm-hmm.
Even if we don't get a ton of time with him, if he, like, gets sent away at the beginning of the episode, if they change it where he's, like, done with his ranger training or whatever, mm-hmm. just be a little bit more amorphous about the time, just be all like, oh, well, he's, you know, he's about to go on a mission as, like, his ranger graduation, and, like, we see him leave at the beginning of the episode, mm-hmm. maybe, or something.
Yeah. Could have been neat.
Or, like, they focus on a photo of him with John and Delenn, and they just, like, did that much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, him in, like, ranger training robes or something. Yeah. Like, just a little bit. And I understand that there's, like, dollars involved in that. You got to make a costume.
Sure.
You've got to cast somebody. You've got to pay them.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there's the whole deal.
Yeah.
But surely one of the ranger robes they've got laying around will fit. You know,
you can just cast for a guy who is like 6'2",
Bill Mummy size,
this many pounds, right. You know, I think that's a thing they do. So why not?
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, that's the only quibble I have with it. Really, the least quibble is more just a running bit on the show.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's a beautiful, cathartic ending to our very well thought show.
Yeah, we did it. We got through Babylon 5. This is episode 125 for us, Laura.
Yeah, I'm glad we still have more.
Yeah, me too. Should I be. Mean, besides recording out of order and recording this before we record Objects
Shh.
At Rest.
Shh. They don't need to know.
besides that. It's an appropriate episode to be recorded out of order, to be perfectly honest.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've got our season recap next week. After that, we've got River of Souls and then Road Home. We're going to take a week off, do book club, going to take a week off, and then do Call to Arms followed by Crusade. I have been reading up on all of the different Crusade watch orders, trying to pick one.
Oh no. How's that?
You will have a... Not great. I think we need to have a conversation about it.
Okay.
Because it can impact some things. So.
Oh, interesting. We'll, love it.
We'll talk off pod and try and figure out what we're going to do there. But after Crusade, we want to try and get some of the podcast fam from the League together and maybe do a script read of one of the unshot Crusade scripts.
I'm so ready for it. You got to send me a script.
I scheduled a book club for Centauri Trilogy for October.
Love it.
We have a series recap for Crusade. We've got Legend of the Rangers. We got Lost Tales. We have our B5 retrospective. And I also, at the behest of the Discord, worked a movie break into Crusade. And we will be watching Office Space.
I did not know that there was character overlap between Crusade and Office Space. And Office Space is a movie I have weird, fond feelings for. So buckle up, guys. It's going to be so much fun.
Yeah, I have not watched that movie in years mm-hmm. at this point. I don't know that I've watched this movie since I had a like regular ass office job. I think the last time I watched it, I was doing like hybrid where I was office work, but in an in-home office for several days a week and then traveling and doing other stuff on site places.
Uh-huh.
So I have since got 7-8 years of like working in an office every day experience in my life. And I'm curious how that will impact my feelings on that movie.
The last time I watched this movie, it was for my graduate audit class, and we incorporated it into a presentation. So I will love telling you all about that.
I look forward to it. I won't jump to any conclusions about what that was like.
Amazing.
All right. Well, I guess we've done it. We've... This is us going beyond the rim as a Babylon 5 podcast. We're not done with Babylon 5 stuff, but this is like the line.
Yeah.
you know, mm-hmm. so that's exciting. You know, Yum Yum did this a couple of, like, 2 months ago, I think, by the time this airs.
Mm-hmm.
Grey 17 is, like, a month and a half, maybe 2 months behind us.
Hot on our heels, yeah.
Babylon 5 for the first time is also not terribly far off. I think they're going to finish right around the same time as Grey 17.
Uh-huh.
And then all of us Babylon 5 podcasts that kept going. Shout out to Podcasters Guild Babylon 5. I think they didn't make it out of season 2.
Oh,
but they were fun, the couple episodes we listened to.
Uh-huh.
I've actually started listening to Yum Yums now, Babylon 5 coverage.
Yeah.
I went back this week. Now, I wanted to get through my notes watch of this before I listened to any Babylon 5 podcasting. I'd said that a number of times on pod.
Yeah, understandable.
And I'm now keeping to my word and actually going back and listening to all of our friends' coverage of Babylon 5.
Aww.
So that's been fun, too, mm-hmm. to hear everyone's takes on The Gathering.
For sure.
Yeah. So we'll be back next week with more, but we did it. We also already did the credits, so I guess just rewind the episode if you want to hear the credits again.
You know who we're thanking. You know who we appreciate and who we love.
Yeah, all of you.
Especially.
Jeremy, Angry Duck Time Machine, and Aaron. Thank you so much for joining us on these 125 episodes of Babylon 5 coverage.
How come we've reached this fork in the road, and yet it cuts like a knife? Mm-hmm.
And we'll be back with more next week. Take care, Internet.
Bye. I'm not crying.